This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 2nd of April 2009, and joining me on the line is Gerald Celente. Gerald Celente is an author, lecturer, and trends forecaster who founded the Trends Research Institute in 1980. His amazingly accurate predictions have included correctly forecasting the October 1987 stock market crash, the fall of the Soviet Union, and the Panic of 08. Mr. Celente, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with me today on the Corbett Report.
Oh, James, it's my pleasure.
Now, Mr. Celente, as it's your first time on the program, why don't we start by introducing the Trends Research Institute to those listeners out there who may not have heard of it before. What is it that you do, and how do you go about doing it?
Well, what we do is we look at over 300 trend categories on a daily basis, on a global level, with the understanding that all things are connected. So rather than just looking at an issue, for example, as a technological issue, we understand that there are many implications and directions that trends travel in, rather than in a straight technological line. So we look at changes in the family, social change, economic change. You go back to the late 1960s when they predicted that because of technological advancements, we'd be working half the amount of time we are now and have more leisure time than we know what to do with. And they were wrong because they failed to take in the accounts of geopolitical, social, and economic changes and only looked at it through a technological lens. The same true with the economy. They failed to look at all the other interrelated trends that are affecting the economic trend. So what we also do is we say that current events form future trends. And the great scholar von Schiller said, "In today already walks tomorrow." You can see the face of the future by the events of today. You can't predict it, but you can definitely see how the implications of current events form future trends. And we're political atheists. We don't take sides. We don't look at things through an ideological lens. We just give the diagnosis and let the data speak for itself. And that's really the background on what we do and how we do it.
Well, certainly, as I mentioned before, you've had some amazing success with your trends forecasts in the past, and I invite my listeners to go check those out at trendsresearch.com to find out more about the Trends Research Institute and what you do. But recently, you've been making headlines with your latest predictions of the collapse of 09 and the greatest depression. So tell us exactly what it is you see transpiring over the next 3 years.
Well, the next shoe to drop in the real estate sector is going to be commercial. We're looking at what's going on in the retail sector with all these vacancies. Who's going to rent them? The answer is no one. Retail sales continue to soften. We start seeing more and more store closings. And you're going to see more bankruptcies, just like we saw in 08. We're going to see more in 09. So that's only in the retail sector. Then you look at the commercial sector of real estate and all of the office buildings that are not going to be utilized. They're going to start seeing vacancy rates increase probably to 25-30% rates. And the answer becomes, who's going to rent all this vacant office space? The answer is no one. So that sector is much more leveraged, for example, than the so-called subprime problem. We're talking about companies that put maybe $60 million down and leverage $6 billion. And that's where the big crash is going to come. Following that, we're going to go into what we're calling the greatest depression. And we're saying it's worse than the Great Depression because back then in the 30s, people didn't own homes. Most people didn't own homes. There was no such thing as credit cards. The American consumer was in $14 trillion in debt. We had trade surpluses. Now we're $700 billion in the hole each year. We had balanced budgets. Now, of course, with all these bailouts and stimulus programs, we're probably up to about $13 trillion a year in deficit. And back then, most importantly, we were a manufacturing country. We manufactured our way out of the Great Depression at the onset of World War II. We no longer have that capacity. Plus, we're an underdeveloping nation. Back then, you know, this one is an ascending society. Now it's a descending one in many, many different categories. We no longer win, place, or show when it comes to health, education, quality of life, according to OECD data. And you look what's going on in major cities and high schools. You know, you're lucky to graduate 50% of these kids. So we're a descending society at a time when the economy is failing. And so after, and again, you know, nobody could predict the future, and there are always wild cards that are thrown on the deck that you can't anticipate. So now with all of this stimulus thrown onto the deck, the slowdown, the depression is going to be stalled a bit. There's no question about it. I mean, you throw trillions onto the economy, you know, it's going to, like taking a drug to cure a chronic degenerative disease. It doesn't cure it, but what it does is that it alleviates the symptoms. So we're going to see some kind of financial symptom relief, but the depression is well set in. It's chronic, and it's going to be a killer.
Well, certainly the forecast that you're making there and the trends that you're pointing out in terms of the descending American society is one that's based on thousands of data points and much hard research. But when the hottest selling retail items in the U.S. are guns and ammunition, and the hottest trend is starting a recession garden in your backyard, it's pretty easy to read the writing on the wall at that point. So to what extent do you take this as an organic confirmation of the growing sentiment of unrest that you've predicted? And to what extent do you think this is even a hopeful sign that people are intuitively sensing the coming crisis and attempting to prepare themselves by taking their family's safety and well-being into their own hands?
Well, I'm a close combat practitioner. I train with John Perkins, attackproof.com, and have been a close combat martial artist for over a quarter of a century. So we plan for the worst. When you plan for the worst, for survival, in the case of a worst-case scenario, you have room to push back from that. If you're only hoping for the best and something a lot worse than the best happens, you have no room. So we see it as an encouraging sign that people are taking the future into their own hands and not relying on anyone to come to the rescue. Necessity is the mother of invention. And this country has the innovative spirit that no other country has. Unfortunately, what's holding us back is that the government is becoming more and more of a big brother. There's a lot of debate now, James, is whether or not these stimulus package rescue plans and bailout schemes are turning the country into a socialistic country. They talk about nationalism. By definition, state-controlled capitalism is called fascism. And so what happens in this kind of environment is that creativity and innovation are stifled. So we have the force that necessity is the mother of invention, but then we have a greater force or an equal force against it, in that this mantra of too big to fail is pushing down the entrepreneur and the free spirit and taking so much of the resources and regenerating them into an area that does not bring about the innovation and growth concepts that really pay off in the long run. And you mentioned about what you call recession gardens. Is that what you call them?
I've heard them called many things recently, but recession gardens is one of them.
Well, back in our top trends for 2009, we had predicted that this was going to happen in 2008. And we call them Bush gardens as a joke, in that people would remember that we had this president in there. That, you know, and of course, he's not responsible. They all are. You go back to the Clinton administration, they're the ones that deregulated the economy, Glass-Steagall Act, the Banking Act, and allowed all these derivatives and these games to be played. But we joked about it, and that we're going to see more and more of this. People are going to start becoming more self-sufficient, and it's only the intelligent thing to do. And this concept that they're going to free up lending so people could borrow more, I mean, this is what got us into it. So, yeah, we are hopeful in the sense that when people start regaining their dignity and self-respect and planning their own futures without looking for someone else to do it, we have a better future in sight.
Well, picking up on your close combat expertise, which you mentioned earlier, I came across an interesting quotation of yours that, quote, "The first rule of close combat is to attack the attacker. Action is faster than reaction. The same holds true for the future. You know the future is coming. Attack it before it attacks you," end quote. So on that note, what exactly does it mean to attack the future, and how does one go about doing that?
Well, you know, with close combat, you know, you use your senses. And if you feel you have to attack, you do. You ask questions later. And it's the same thing now with the economy. We firmly believe that you cannot print money based on nothing without creating a hyperinflation scenario. So, for example, speaking only for myself, because we do not provide financial advice, we're trend forecasters, I buy gold. Now, I know that gold is taking quite a hit these days compared to where it was. It's down to the 900 level now, in the belief that the worst is over. We don't believe the worst is over. We don't even think the worst has yet begun. So those are the kind of measures that we take. You mentioned about gun sales. It's a time to consider those kind of things. I'm a firm believer in Second Amendment rights. The other aspects are, if you have a child in college and you cannot afford it and they're going to be going deep in debt, do they really need to get that master's degree in public administration, the undergraduate in journalism and communications or business administration? Are they really that necessary? I mean, they have to get a degree in art history. So unless they're going to college to get a return on investment, really consider twice in taking proactive strategies rather than waiting for the worst to come and then be stuck with a lot of debt and a dead-end job. Because what are you going to do with that degree? They're looking at advanced numbers now coming out in February, March unemployment. We're looking, the initial reports are coming out. We're looking at about 750,000 new people lost their jobs. So these are the kind of proactive strategies to consider. Don't spend an extra penny that you don't have to. That doesn't mean you can't live, but live well. Only buy quality, buy smaller amounts. And by the way, those are the businesses that are going to thrive. Average is not going to make it during the greatest depression. Quality is the best of the best.
Absolutely. Well, the current economic collapse itself and its roots in the emperor has no clothes fiat money system will be something that my regular listeners are quite familiar with, as it's something we've been covering on this podcast since its inception. But that plays into something else that you've been forecasting, which is the rise of a third party in the United States by 2012. Tell us the broad characteristics you see this new party having, and are we looking at a period of constitutional restoration or merely an escalation of unrest?
One of the ways that I gain my my trend forecasting credibility was after one of my books that came out, Trend Tracking, in the late 1980s, I had forecast the rise of a third party, and for some reason I mentioned someone like Ross Perot, and hence 3 or 4 years later that came to pass. What we're going to see is, first, we're going to see a lot of disturbance in this country. There's going to be a revolution in America. Off with their heads is going to become a reality. You're seeing it happening in Europe. It's going to happen here, too. People are fed up, particularly with this mantra of too big to fail. I don't know who came up with that one. But I could say with full authority, their mother's not better than mine. And in a free enterprise, too big can fail. Too little can't be saved. I mean, who came up with this concept? And by the way, just to put that in firm reality, we just saw what happened with this AIG bailout, with some of the money, where it went. And $12 billion, for example, went to Deutsche Bank. Well, Deutsche Bank has $2.5 trillion worth of assets. Did $12 billion really make any difference between the survival of the economic system as they claimed it was going to collapse if AIG didn't get bailed out? Who are they kidding? So that's the whole sham, and people are seeing it. So there's going to be unrest. The third party, and I wrote about this years ago, actually, in anticipation of the future. For the lack of a better name, we would call it progressive libertarian. a combination of the two. We believe you need some regulation. For example, the regulatory system was working perfectly fine in the banking industry that was put into place during the Great Depression with the Glass-Steagall Act. It prohibited the banks from becoming the banksters that they've become. There were casinos now could gamble. Before, they weren't allowed to gamble. A bank was a bank was a bank. They loaned money, and they did it with very, very strict and cautious and conservative methodologies. So those kind of things, a balance of the two, and a return to the Constitution. So, for instance, the party might be called, you know, a constitutional rights party, but there's going to be violence leading up to it, unfortunately. And I was on Fox Happy Hour on Wednesday. I don't know what day this will be broadcast on your podcast, but it was April 1st. And I mentioned that this is going to happen in this country. There's going to be a revolution, and there will be a third party, and that people better prepare, because the question that I'm throwing out there is, will the government fire on its people if they begin to protest en masse?
Well, unfortunately, that's the reality that we're going to have to face very soon if things continue developing the way they are. And I don't see any way for us to really start to avoid this type of violence as the unrest escalates and as the depression worsens. And it's clear that there is some type of conflict shaping up. And as these alternative political movements stir across the developed world, the current financial political complex will be seeking to defend the status quo. And I think one area that the powers that be will be targeting is the free flow of information across the internet that is making this conversation possible and, of course, helping to organize the resistance to the current crisis. So to what extent do you think the recent Australian internet filtering proposal, for example, is part of a larger thrust toward curtailment of online civil liberties in the developed world generally? And extrapolating on that, how do you see that trend developing in the coming years?
Well, net neutrality is going to be a huge issue. And we're even seeing people like this Bill O'Reilly calling what people like yourself and what I'm doing, they're because of the power of the Internet, he's equating it to pedophiles, how they gain a presence on the Internet. And it appears that anything that isn't done along with the lines of the status quo is attacked as subversive, or as this guy, I mean, is doing it, looking at it as illicit and lewd. I mean, what kind of warped mind could put the two together? And as I had mentioned yesterday when I was on Fox, and they were running footage of the protests at the G8 meeting, that they call the people that were protesting anarchists and all derisive names. And I said, you know, I said, how about calling these people angry? I mean, why do they have to be categorized? So there's going to be this push, kind of like a fear of terror, that is going to really be a struggle to keep the Internet free. However, having said that, we believe that in the end, that net neutrality will probably stay at levels that we see now because of the strong Internet community. We don't think they're going to let it happen, and government won't be able to legislate it. That's for the short term, by the way.
I see. Well, Mr. Salente, are you an optimist or a pessimist?
I'm neither. We look at the facts for what they are. If you go to your doctor, James, and he gives you a diagnosis that isn't a pleasant one, that makes him neither an optimist or a pessimist. What we do see from the collapse is that something is dying that is worth to die. For example, when you listen to President Obama, and what the scheme is to loosen up the credit line so people could go out and borrow more. I mean, this is what got us into this thing. People shouldn't be borrowing more than they could afford. You don't borrow and hope to pay back later. You, if you're going to borrow, you must have the means to pay it back in the future to pay it back in. So the optimism is that what we're seeing is the collapse of the too big to fails and leaving opportunities for the entrepreneurs and the communities to regenerate themselves, because Wall Street killed Main Street. Let's not forget that. And now that Wall Street is failing, Main Street can again reassert itself. Wall Street gave the big chains all those opportunities to expand and put everyone else out of business. Wall Street gave the ability for them to build these huge shopping malls and other monstrosities, getting tax breaks, loan guarantees, infrastructure, and they pay off the politicians to do it. That's dying now. So as we see the ghost malls start to appear, we can see revitalization of the community spirit. And that's what made America strong, and we believe it can make America strong again in the future.
Well, that's a fair answer, but I'd venture to say if the doctor gives you medicine, he's an optimist, and if he refers you to a mortician, he's a pessimist. But Mr. Salente, tell people how they can find out more about yourself and your work.
Yes, they can go to our website, which is trendsresearch.com, trendsresearch.com. And we encourage them to look at the top trends for 2009, but in doing so, also look back at our top trends. The Trends Journal issue is listed there for 2008. So they can go back and read it, and they can judge for themselves as to whether or not, you know, our work is for them and the efficacy of our work. Because our motto, James, is think for yourself. We put out the information, everyone puts out the information, but you have to make the final decision. The people, you know, they talk about thinking outside the box. There is no box. It's only the only box that's put there is by the limitations of the mind. And in this new era that we're going into, the 21st century, innovation is going to be key. And this is the time, really, to think for yourself.
Well, that's an excellent point and a very, very important message for my listeners to take away from this. So on that note, Mr. Salente, it's been a pleasure talking with you today, and I hope that you can come back on the program sometime in the future to share more of your insights with us.
I would love that. Thank you so much, James.